welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Tuesday afternoon in Los Angeles. If you're watching us on YouTube, and you certainly can on ESPN's YouTube channel, you'll see that we're sitting right in front of the Staples Center here in L.A. Violation, crypto.com arena.
Good fix.
Yeah. Kawhi's house.
Oh, ooh. That hit my guy right here, Dave McMenamin, who's our LA-based reporter.
There we go. Lakers.
And you've been unbanned from, after the Eastern Conference yesterday, you've been unbanned to talk about the West, Ban McMahon.
Howdy, partners.
Recording this on Tuesday. I have no idea what's going to happen in the next couple days before this run, so just know that, because there could be some maneuvers this week. Some Lakers fans, Dave, have been hoping for our maneuver. The roster they've put together is very interesting, which we'll talk about in a second. But we're going to start off with a team you've also covered quite a bit, the Phoenix Suns. The team that was the number one overall seed in the West last year and obviously had a very surprising second-round exit. The Suns have had a lot of stuff happen off of the court in the last few days. We're going to focus on what's going on the court. The Suns have essentially the same core team that they had last year. They bring back Dario Saric, who missed all last year with an ACL, but they have the same core. They did lose JaVale McGee to the Mavericks. They won 62 games, I think, last year.
64.
They were one of the best clutch teams in NBA history. Chris Paul and Devin Booker were absolutely devastating in the clutch. Monty Williams was coach of the year. Having been around them quite a bit in the regular season and the playoffs, thought they had the look of a championship team. Very surprised the way it ended. Dave, the Suns this year, regardless of the Robert Sarver situation, have sky-high expectations. Their biggest situation in the offseason was matching an offer sheet for DeAndre Ayton and then flirting with a Kevin Durant trade, but I don't think they ever got close. And so the Suns are a team that we're all going to be keeping a very close eye on.
Right. There's two dirty words in the NBA that I can say on this podcast without getting bleeped, and those are front runner. And that is the reputation that this Suns team has now picked up.
I think it's one word, but it's a good point.
Is it?
Yeah.
Front runner?
Mm-hmm.
No hyphen? Nothing?
I mean, you should know.
Syracuse.
Wow, there we go. No, that's not what he was getting at. He wasn't getting at the education. He was getting at the reputation.
Oh, man.
So
that went over my head.
They, by virtue of going up 2-0 in the finals in 2021 and getting swept.
And now, they believed if certain circumstances that they were sore last year, they didn't win it. They thought they should have won.
Yeah, and they came into the postseason as the team. I talked to people all around the league, and it was like the Suns are here, and then there's a formidable gap between the next competition, whether it be East or West. But listen, not only did they lose that series, they got drudged. They absolutely got destroyed. Tim and I were there on press row, slack jaw, watching the Mavericks. And guys like Spencer Dinwiddie, who has barely been an NBA player over the last couple of years because of injury, just smack him up and down the court.
And they talked a lot of trash.
That's what it is.
A lot of strutting, and Luka absolutely punked them.
Yes.
When it's 27, Luka 27, Suns 27 at halftime,
man.
And the rest of the Mavs have chipped in 30.
I had covered Celtics Bucks Game 7 that day, so I'm in the arena, I'm working in the locker room, and I come out and I look at that score in the first quarter, and I was stunned.
It was an absolute no show by the Suns, and we've talked about this before. A loss like that lingers. It hovers like a black cloud. I don't think it's just as forget all the Robert Sarver mess. There's a lot of bad mojo hovering over the Suns. Was all off season with the Ayton situation and just the way to be that close to a championship. Right, I go back to the Mavs. They lost in the finals after being up 2-0.
Yeah.
Right. Came back, best record in the league. They got spanked in the first round by the Warriors, and it took a regime change and a whole lot of things for that franchise to climb.
I've seen
back.
It go both ways. Like, I remember going to media day with the Spurs after the Spurs blew that finals against the Heat. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, boy, I'm going to have to ask them about the finals, and it's not going to be fun, and they don't know what to talk about it. They talked about it, they embraced it, and they were so focused that whole season and came back and stomped the Heat.
But that was a core of champions.
You're right. You are right. But this team has character players.
Of course they
and
do.
And can high competitors.
But as brilliant as Chris Paul has been, you look at the last four games of that series for him in the second round, shooting low around 40%.
He wasn't right. I think we can say he wasn't
under 10
right.
points per game, of course.
How old is he?
37, yeah. Year 18.
So how often is he going to be right?
Well, let me just say this. Playoffs? Let me just say this. There's some theories about why he wasn't right. Let's just push all that aside and say Chris Paul wasn't right. The rest of their team absolutely did not answer the challenge.
No. DeAndre Ayton couldn't be played in Game 7 because Monty Williams didn't feel like he had the fight in him that was requisite for
benched.
The moment.
Yeah, he was benched.
Devin Booker goes 9 for 31 combined in Game 6 and 7. He's supposed to be the ascendant number two.
Booker has been a killer in closeout games earlier in his career.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I covered Game 6 in L.A.
The previous year, earlier in his career, he was watching him on the couch.
Well, whatever. I agree the track record isn't 10 years long. But, I mean, I expected Booker to rise to the occasion. He has risen to the occasion before.
So, to me, you know, they're fascinating because you thought they were knocking on the door of something incredible. And now you wonder if they become – and also ran what if they become the Thunder of the early 2010s, they become the Clippers of the mid 2010s, that just never got there.
Well,
even though you
Monty
thought they
Williams
were supposed
job.
To be
there. Monty Williams' job is not let that happen. He got a big contract extension in the offseason. That's Devin Booker's job. That's Chris Paul's job. And they have to recognize that that maybe they shouldn't rely so much on Chris. I mean, the thing about their 64 wins is, maybe you could argue, I've said this before, that if you played that season out three times, maybe all that great clutch play isn't
right.
really sustainable. Maybe they were maybe a 58-win, 59-win team masquerading. But, and there's some – I've seen some projections out there, some analytics projections that have them, down the list a little bit. What I will say about them is, and if you listen to our East Coast podcast, I've been talking about this, or our Eastern Conference, I keep saying Coast. I look at teams and I look at their ability to improve. And the Suns have assets. They own all of their picks going forward, all their firsts. I think they own all their seconds. And they have some pieces on the roster they can trade. I've talked this week about how Jay Crowder is an available trade piece. Cam Johnson is coming in off his third year. He's extension eligible. We'll see if that gets done. I think there's a good chance it will.
Hey, get it done when the guy's got to sign the checks. Can't have any say in it.
That's true. Although the Suns are spending, they are in the tax for the first time in 12 years. So that must be noted. I mean, we're not going to talk about the guy signing the checks, but that is, they gave him the clearance to do that.
Can't trade Ayton.
Can't trade
until,
Ayton.
What is that? Until January?
January 15th, but he has a full year with having say. He can veto any trade.
That's right.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't know how many trades he would veto because I don't know how ecstatic DeAndre Ayton is about being in Phoenix, where he was essentially scapegoated in a Game 7 where the All-Stars no-showed. Somehow DeAndre Ayton was a scapegoat.
I think you're both bringing up good points. I think the trade restriction is important to recognize, and I think it's also important to recognize there was some damage there, and we'll have to see how it goes.
Yeah. There needs to be some healing in the relationship between the head coach and the big man, who, to DeAndre Ayton's credit, he's a number one overall pick who bought in and did, he became a great screener. He became a guy who was locked in as a defensive anchor. He did all the dirty work.
I will say this, knowing DeAndre a little bit, guys have yelled at him his whole career. Like, I say yelled at him, they've treated him as kind of the in-the-moment scapegoat. Chris Paul's yelled at him. Monty's yelled at him. And he's always, for the most part, been willing to listen and try to take something on. But he doesn't get beat down, at least outwardly.
I think
some of it is his, he's Bahamian. He's sort of easygoing. He's like, okay, all right, man, okay, I got it. And that's sometimes why they yell at him. That's also sometimes why he's able to let it roll off his back. So I think there's a chance that it could roll off his back.
But here's the interesting alchemy, sorry to interrupt. You have...
Palenka loves that.
It is a great book, I will say. It's one of my favorites. You have Chris Paul is 37. DeAndre is, what, 22, 23. Mm-hmm. Devin Booker, 25, but seems to be an old soul.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's, you got to line up these players at the same stage of their career, the same money security in the bank, the same willingness to be in it and sacrifice for one another. That's the question mark for me. Are they synced up here
and
in
I
their
thought,
leaders?
Dave, I thought they were last year.
Yeah, I did too.
I felt like, I mean, like, you know, look, sometimes you don't win. Sometimes I just like this is a – I just did not see them having that type of collapse.
To lose 4 out of 5 and just get historically humiliated on their home floor.
But, you know, there were some signs of trouble in that first-round series against New Orleans, which I covered.
Yeah, I kind of wrote that off as, hey, Booker was out most of that series.
So did
but
I,
you're
right.
Mm-hmm.
So did I.
There were signs.
Yeah, so we'll see. They have potential to improve. I do think Cam Johnson's role will expand this year. Mm-hmm.
Bridges definitely has room to grow, and he's already a heck of a player.
Look, I am. It's not exactly a hot take. I think both Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson have more to give.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The problem is not a problem, but they're really good in their roles, and they have stars on their roster. Right. I'm not saying you do that, but there was this 5-game stretch last year where Chris Paul was out with the wrist injury mm-hmm. or the thumb injury, and. Booker had COVID, mm-hmm. and they sort of ran stuff through Cam and Bridges, and they were great. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, like, you know, you give any team, you give guys shots, they're going to look better. But, like, there was this stretch. Like, Cam Johnson was awesome in that stretch, so we'll see. All right, the Lakers.
Good luck.
You presented on NBA Today, you were on today with me, and you presented – a case for how this roster would work. And I'm going to speak for you here. I don't think you're advocating for this mm-hmm. case, but you're reporting the way the Lakers see it. Can you...
Or spin it.
I still wonder if this is going to be what the Lakers roster looks like in 48 hours, 480 hours, 4 weeks. But please tell me how you think the Lakers...
So you got LeBron and Anthony Davis as your guaranteed starters, and you hope for health. After both of them really not playing the requisite amount of games to have them mm-hmm. look like a contender the last two seasons coming off the bubble championship.
What positions are they playing?
Most of the time, you have LeBron at the 3, but he can play some point. Most of the time, you have Anthony Davis at the 4, but a significant amount of time would also have him at the 5, including at the end of games. Mm-hmm. Because that's where you get that true advantage in terms of you pull the other center off and you can do all sorts of stuff defensively. He can guard the perimeter. Now, your starting center is going to be either Thomas Bryant or Damian Jones, most likely, for opening night. We don't know about Russell Westbrook.
For the sake of this podcast, let's assume that he is on the roster.
Well, okay, even so. We still don't know about Ryan. We don't know if he's coming off the bench or not. Darvin Ham told our Mark Spears that he's going to start. That may be his intention, but I'm not so sure how long that will last if that does occur.
Okay.
You have Patrick Beverley, who's brought in, who has a history of cantankerous interactions with Russell Westbrook. And he's
also
a point
guard. I will say this about
Beverley.
Beverley does make the best of his situation.
Beverly helps teams win.
Yeah, he makes the best of his situation. He sometimes says things that are absolutely ridiculous, and I have told him such on national television. But I will say this about Bev. Regardless of what you think about him, his track record is that he does help his teams. And so
he's a hell of a role player.
They want him to help their team, not as a point guard necessarily, because they want to have his wing defense be a primary thing he brings to the table along with shooting, because mm-hmm. they did not address shooting whatsoever, which you said – quite adroitly on NBA Today on Tuesday.
It's a Syracuse
one. I'm telling you. This is like a vocabulary runner. Lesson here.
And so you don't have him as a point guard. Last year you signed Kendrick Nunn. He was, as out of all their terrible offseason signings last year, he was the worst one because he played 0 games.
That's right.
As he's trying to get back into shape, trying
he's
to get his confidence back.
Of these guards that you're talking about, he's their historically the best shooter of all of them, but he's not.
There you go. But guess what? They brought him in originally thinking this guy can play combo, play some point, play shooting guard. Right now, I'm told that what he has to do is get his confidence back, and they want him to do that through scoring the basketball. Don't worry about the point guard duties.
Okay.
Get your mojo
so
back.
So what you're painting a picture of is that Westbrook at point, Beverly coming off the bench, playing both backup point and wing defender, and Kendrick Nunn as starting two?
No, I still think Kendrick Nunn will be coming off the bench. You have Austin Reeves potentially as the starting two. And we haven't mentioned Dennis Schroeder, who is also going to be in the equation, as they view him as their backup point to start the year coming in, but recognize that he could win the job in training camp.
Okay. So I've said this before. I like the Schroeder signing in and of itself. They get him for the minimum. This is a guy they like. They traded for him, then they tried to extend him. Now they get him back for the minimum. He is a guy who has won them games. He's also been a guy that's disappeared. But when you're playing on a minimum salary, if you disappear, okay, you're a minimum player. You don't have an $80
million contract.
It's not
like you're making $47 million.
So I like the signing. What I don't understand is how it fits in. Schroeder is a poor outside shooter. He shot in the neighborhood of like 31% last year. Austin Reeves, who I think the whole Laker fan base likes. Great find. Another
heady player.
Another very good find by the Lakers scouting staff and Rob Pelinka. He shot 32% as a rookie from three. Patrick Beverley, I know that there are years in his career where he has shot well from three, but last year was not one of them, and the year before he was not. He's gone down 3 years in a row, and last year was his worst year. Now, again, maybe playing with LeBron and AD, playing out there, maybe he will rise back up. But I'm just here to tell you.
Lonnie Walker, their mid-level exception guy they brought in, he had his worst year as a three-point shooter last year also.
2%, yeah. I think. Right. I'm sorry. Like, this is not how you win in the modern NBA, and it's not how you win with LeBron James. You just don't. I mean, McMahon, you were over there in Germany watching these games. Germany was great. They made it to the Final Four of the Eurobasket. Dennis Schroeder was on the all-tournament team.
Yeah.
And the teams were backing off of him because they were like,
no, there was a game when they lost against, I think it was Slovenia. You know, he said in the postgame press conference, I got to hit a bleeping shot.
Yeah.
And there is just, and what you have on this team is not only is it's a lack of shooting, but how many guys are you going to put on a roster with LeBron James that need the ball in their hands or their minuses?
They're
small. It's Russ, it's Schroeder. I mean, there's nobody who can play off of LeBron.
That's the thing. Like, you know, and Juan Toscano-Anderson is, you know, he can defend, but he's not a shooter. He's not a shooter. So, like, I do think that they got more athletic on defense, which was an absolute
Troy Brown Jr., you know, affordable pickup, some upside.
He's a minimum player. I mean, right. You know, Wes Matthews, a guy that the Lakers let go, signs for a minimum with Milwaukee last year and is great.
Yep.
Sometimes minimums work out. Sometimes, most of the time, minimums are the minimum.
And guess what happens if these things don't work out? They don't mesh. They don't congeal. LeBron takes it upon himself to figure it out. In doing so, he can still do spectacular things. I don't think LeBron James will fall too far off the production he had last year. Maybe not 30 points per game, but still be a very effective NBA player. But in doing so, he will put his body more at risk because he will be taking on a bigger role. And guess what happens? If he gets hurt again, it's kaput. It's, you know, you can start looking ahead to 23-24 already.
Yeah, and LeBron for so long, for a generation plus, was just incredibly durable. But it's impossible to be that durable this long into a career having played the most minutes in NBA history. It's just not humanly possible.
I just
think
that even if it all works, even if Beverly does prove to be adept at wing defender, even with like, because there are stats that show that Russell Westbrook shot 40% in corner threes. I know he didn't take that many.
I think it was 2 of 5.
Was it? I mean, it was a little bit more.
It's a little more now.
But I was like, wait a minute, is it really that long? Maybe he does. Maybe he does run into the corner and shoot threes. I mean, like
40% go in, 40% hit the side of the backboard.
What's the top end? What's the top end? Is the top end ninth place?
I think top end. Like, if this thing goes totally right, the best you could hope for, you're the sixth seed.
Yeah, if LeBron and AD are healthy and play at the level that we've seen them before, I think it's a playoff team. I don't think it's a team that advances in the playoffs. Yeah.
Well, AD has posted his workouts, so it must be going great. But, I mean, AD has appeared to have been focused. They've had a long offseason, longest offseason in years to rest. So we'll see. And, you know, Darvin Ham, he has been prepared for this moment. A lot of people like him a lot. I respect his mind. We'll see. I just look at this roster and I just can't believe that this is the way they honestly want to play. I suspect by February it may look very different, maybe even by December. So, all right, Dave, thank you very much. Enjoy
you,
the
Brian.
Road with the Lakers. We'll be talking to you.
Hopefully I can avoid Tim for a couple more months.
I like your chances.
See you at Top Golf tonight.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Okay, now we're joined by Kendra Andrews, who covers the Warriors for us, based in San Francisco. How's it going, Kendra?
It's pretty good.
So you are going, I believe, to Tokyo with the Warriors and Wizards for two games in about a week here.
I am, exactly 1 week.
First global games that we've had since 2019. I think you might have a better Tokyo experience than I did during the Olympics last year. What are you looking forward to with the Warriors on that trip?
I was going to say sushi, but like I don't. That part doesn't really include the Warriors. So still the sushi, I think, but... You know, it's preseason, right? How much can you really take away from preseason? How much can you take away from them playing the Wizards? And it's going to give the first glimpse, I think, at where this team is at coming off of that championship, most notably James Wiseman, right? We saw him play in Summer League. That was the first time we've seen him play in a year and a half, but... That was with Summer League team.
To be honest
team.
With you, that is what I want to watch. I'm interested. I know Wiseman was kind of, I think he averaged like 10 and 5.
Yeah.
He did have some high profile, he did have some like, he was blocking shots, protecting the rim. Wiseman, to me, is one of the most interesting people to watch in the league. I've been intrigued with his talent for years now. Mm-hmm. But he has played, I think, 39 games in his whole career.
Right.
Had two knee surgeries last season. And it's not just Wiseman, but also Jonathan Kuminga and Moses Moody. I mean, part of this early part of the season for the Warriors is what do they have in these young guys? We know what they have in their stars. But what these young guys have is going to frame this season a lot.
And it's going to be the first time that we see this young group and this already solidified group fully together, right? Because we did see glimpses of Jonathan Kuminga and Moses Moody with Steph and those guys last year. We haven't seen James Wiseman with it. You're going to add in Jordan Poole. So when we're talking about this Warriors win now, invest in the future, how do we balance it? This is the first time that we're actually going to see the complete group of both of those conversations play together.
And you're talking about, you know, the future with those guys and what's the foundation maybe look like in the years after Steph and Draymond and Clay. Wiseman is particularly fascinating because, you know, I think they're going to obviously have to give him time, have to give him, you know, some minutes, some space to develop the season, to show what he has. But there could be a very fascinating and, you know, perhaps difficult decision for Steve Kerr and that front office to make as they're getting closer to the playoffs. Because I'll be honest with you, last year when there was still discussion about Will Wiseman might be coming back, he might be coming back, it's like, man, I don't think Steve Kerr and those guys want him coming back this year. Like, and so is he going to progress enough to where they're going in the playoffs and he's seen as a guy who can contribute to a championship run? Or is it going to be, hey, this number two pick in his third season is not good enough to crack our playoff rotation?
That would be not good, but they can afford it if it's not. They have to find out what they've got in him. You just – Kendra, you just don't see guys that big with that kind of skill set very often.
No, I mean, his touch around the rim is incredible. The way he can move, like his mobility and agility for a guy who's over 7 feet tall, you really don't see. He told me at Summer League, he put on 7 to 10 pounds of muscle. He was a big guy before, but his shoulders are insanely big. The feel that he has, it's there. It's about the nuances of the game and figuring out. Like we saw it with Kuminga and Moody this past season, the Warriors really did scale back their roles. Do the simple stuff. We don't want you doing all that. And they're going to ask the same of Wiseman. So I think, first off, for the people thinking he's going to automatically come in and just be their starting center, be it, that's not the case. They're going to bring him along slowly to get the feel. But it's all there on paper. Can he just bring it out to the game because he hasn't had the chance to do it?
Let's talk a little bit about the extension situations. The Warriors have 3 extension-eligible players. One is Jordan Poole, who's on the last year of his rookie deal. That has a deadline of October 15th, give or take. It might be the
14th.
17th? Okay, you're on top of it. the other is Andrew Wiggins, who's going the last year of his contract at like $33, $35 million. He's extension-eligible. He can sign an extension up to June 30th. But ideally, you would negotiate one before the season, but doesn't have to be. We saw extensions mid-season last year. And then the other one is Draymond Green. Draymond has a year left, but it's a player option. Uh-huh. Draymond has already hinted on podcasts that he would like a big extension.
hinted, huh? Very subtle.
The Warriors are facing, with luxury taxes, a payroll between $350 and $400 million this year. This is... you know, a rich person's problem, obviously, because they have a great team. They have a championship team. A bunch of those guys have 4 rings. But I wonder how much of a thing this is going to be if there's not an extension. And I we'll see on Jordan Poole. Mm-hmm. I would be surprised if they extended Wiggins and Draymond. And I'm going to tell you why. We're negotiating a collective bargaining agreement right now. It's possible that collective bargaining agreement will have new rules on the tax. Both the repeater tax, the penalty, could even favor the Warriors. Mm-hmm. I won't get into the weeds, but there's some things that the Warriors would definitely like. You know, one of the things the Warriors have talked about, Kendra, and you've heard this, is that the Warriors think there should be a tax break on teams who if you're paying guys who you drafted.
Right.
Which would favor the Warriors, which is why I think it will get voted down. But it's something that is...
Right, despite the fact that it is fair. I'm sorry. Why should they be penalized because they hit on a 7th overall pick and an 11th
I agree,
and
but,
a 30
But the reality is that the salaries have gotten out of whack. The teams no longer care about the repeater tax. When the repeater tax was put in 2011, the understanding would be that no one was going into that. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe somebody put their toe into it. The Warriors have blown into it.
Head first,
Devin. And the Clippers have a bigger payroll this year than the Warriors. They're not in the repeater tax, but they will be there. I'll just say this, just to frame this. The Steve Ballmer, who owns the Clippers, mm-hmm. who play right behind us here.
For now.
He makes $850 million a year just on his Microsoft dividends.
He doesn't care about repeater tax.
No.
So before any other investment income, before whatever else he's got invested in, before the Clippers sell one ticket, before he gets one outlay from the TV contracts, mm-hmm. the man makes $850 million just in one stock holding. Now, granted, he is the largest individual stockholder in Microsoft. He's even got more than Bill Gates, and I don't blame him. And I wouldn't sell any of it. So that's why the Clippers could do that. But the Warriors' advantage is that they have an arena that pumps out money, mm-hmm. and they have an ownership that has been willing to. And, you know, I've been attacked. I've upset Warriors fans before because I've talked about how their money is a big weapon. That it's not as big a weapon as Steph Curry. I agree. Their biggest weapon is Steph Curry. They have a lot of weapons. Part of their weapon is their money. And but I also want to point out that Joe Lacob and Peter Guber and all their other owners, but Joe Lacob and Peter Guber, were willing to sell off a piece of the team to finance the back end of Steph Curry's mm-hmm. run. That is something that is generally not seen in the modern era.
Right.
But okay, all that aside, Kendra, how much do you think the extension thing will be at issue at all, especially in the preseason?
I think first when you look at Jordan Poole, right, you said he has a deadline, right? The other two guys, that's a year, 2 years down the line. Jordan Poole on October 17th. And the thing is, when you get to these non-max rookie extensions,
I think he might want.
He might want.
He might not want a non-max.
Yeah. But those things come down to the wire, right? Conversations really pick up a couple days before that deadline. So that's what I think is going to happen. As you said, they have meetings. They're doing all these other things. Those conversations have started, right? They've had those conversations with Jordan Poole and his representation, but they haven't picked up yet.
Yeah.
The same goes. It forces it. And then same goes for Andrew Wiggins. That deadline's even further. And then Draymond Green. I mean, come on. Like, that's something that get through Jordan Poole and Andrew Wiggins first. And then when it's actually that year where you're confronted and you have to figure out Draymond Green, and is he worth that max extension? Because how old is he going to be by the time that it's time
he's
to sign that?
He's worth a lot of money, but
yeah.
The max, I don't know.
Right. So cross the bridge when they get there. And I think the fact that the Draymond Green conversation is happening already.
It's because Draymond Green started. That's right. New media. Thank you, Draymond.
I don't think anything's subtle about Draymond.
And you just laid out exactly why it makes sense to kind of proceed in that order.
Yeah.
But Draymond is the loudest.
Yes.
He is the one who certainly has the most potential and ability to rock the boat. And so, you know, that's why that's the one that I'm most interested to see how it plays out.
Yeah. So there's a lot of teams next year who have cap space set up, way more than there were in the summer of 2022. One of them is the Lakers. Mm. If there is no extension when the season starts, which, again, I would educatedly guess that there won't be for Draymond or Wiggins, mm-hmm. maybe for Poole. Will Draymond have a little dip his toes in some water as the season goes along? You know, oh boy, the Lakers' future is so bright. They just need a veteran forward in here. You know, oh boy.
He could really.
The Detroit Pistons have a great looking future. Being back in my home state, it's just great to see that the Pistons have a great future. Will he do a little tweaking as the season goes
along? I think Draymond, if he came to the Lakers, would really help them in some clutch situations.
Kendra, what else are you looking forward to with the Warriors this year?
Oh, man. I mean, I think, again, when you look back at this past championship run, the thing that was coming out of the Warriors after that win was this one felt different than the other three and during
sweet.
The dynasty.
You could tell how much they loved it.
Right. And so I'm interested to see how much they build off of that. The big conversation from the outside was how much gas does Steph – what's their window, right? How much does Steph have left? How much does Draymond have left? I've been told that Steph in his summer workouts right now is looking incredible. They say there's no reason why he shouldn't pick up right
Kendra,
where he left off.
I think this window is wide open.
Yeah.
So I am very curious to see exactly that.
Yeah.
Let's see how long this window goes.
I just put it this way. Like, you know, we can't predict injuries, but I would say that if they don't win again, mm-hmm. it won't be because they got old. It's because of competition.
They got hurt.
This competition is so tough.
Yeah.
But we've been talking a lot about the West, and thank you for stopping by. Have a great time in Tokyo. Maybe
thank
we'll
you.
Talk to you while you're there if you have any free time. Of course, it's like a 12-hour difference. It's really strange. Thanks
okay.
a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, girl-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Okay, now joined by Om Youngmasook, our LA-based reporter who covers the Clippers, amongst other things in the NBA. This is your office behind us.
Yeah.
Crypto, earlier in the pod, I called it Staples Center.
Did you?
I have to put money in the jar. I have to put crypto. I have to put Bitcoin in the jar.
No, it's not worth nearly as much as it was a while ago.
That's true.
In a few years, it'll be the Intuit Dome.
Yes, the Clippers. Is that two more years here?
2 more years, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. A few years ago, I got leaked. About 4 or 5 years ago, I got leaked the books, the NBA books, and like what all the teams make. And the Clippers just made vastly less money than the Lakers. Mm-hmm. Like it was like $20 million less a year, and that was 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So you could see why they could do the math on their own.
I mean, those 12 o'clock starts are not good for them on Saturday, so it's not good for anyone. I hate getting up for those 12 o'clock starts, and apparently the Clippers do too because they sleepwalk through those games.
Yeah. So the Clippers, installed by quite a few people as the favorites to win the West. Ramona Shelburne had a remarkable stat that she said on NBA Today, where she was talking about how people mock Anthony Davis for his mm-hmm. injuries. Charles Barkley calls him, doesn't he call him Anthony Street Clothes or something like yeah. that? Over the last three seasons, he's played 138 games, which is more than Kawhi or Paul George.
Yeah, but there's a difference, though, okay? If you're missing games here and there because you're constantly hurt with these little small nagging injuries, that's one thing, and I think that's where Anthony Davis gets a lot of his grief. Kawhi Leonard missed the whole season with a torn ACL.
I get it, and I agree with you. I'm not making. I'm just saying that they've barely played. Yeah. I mean, look, if Kawhi doesn't blow out his knee in that game, the Clippers might have won the title.
Yes,
I don't know if they beat the Bucks, but like Kawhi was playing some of the best ball. Like, I mean, of course the Clippers got behind because that's what they do, mm-hmm. but that game. You were there at that game, right? What was the game?
I wasn't at the game, but it was against the Jazz.
Yeah,
it was against the Jazz.
Mm-hmm. And then the Clippers still came back and won that series, but obviously without
Kawhi. But the previous series.
No, the previous series is when they beat the Mavericks. Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about. But he had an incredible series.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. His game six.
That's what I'm talking about.
And so remember, the Mavs got up.
He had like 42?
Yeah, 40-some odd and was guarding Luka down the stretch.
Yes.
I mean, it was maybe the best playoff performance of Kawhi's career. And I understand what a mouthful that is, mm-hmm. you know, given the hardware that guy has.
Well, so the thing about the Clippers, obviously, is health. Over the last, you know, they knew that last year was going to kind of be a transition year without Kawhi. And they set to work to build the depth on their roster, Ohm.
They are deep. They're the deepest team in the NBA. I was just taking a look at the roster, and I was thinking, Ty Lue has a legit 11 guys that he should play. And I was just wondering, like, what is he going to... I mean, you're talking almost like Luke Kennard is almost at the bottom of that. Luke Kennard led the league in three-point shooting this past season. So it's like, you know, the Terrence Manns are probably still going to be part of the rotation, but every night, what is he going to do with Robert Covington? Nick Batum is going to be a part of that rotation. Ivica Zubac could be, you know, who has been a key starter for them and has given them good minutes since they're only real big. There are going to be nights where he's not playing in that fourth quarter because Ty Lue falls in love with these small lineups that he likes to. His envision, he's told me this, he envisions five guys out there that can all switch and guard any position. Yeah. And he can do it. He can do it with this Clippers lineup.
Well, I mean, I really liked when I saw it at Brandon Boston last year, and I don't know how he's going to get on the game.
No, yeah.
I mean, I talked earlier in the pod, or actually, we already recorded it, but maybe it hasn't come out yet, give a little window into our procedure here. Sorry. I have talked in the past about how much money the Warriors spend. Mm-hmm. The Clippers spend, their payroll this year is $198 million before taxes. And this is what I mean by building the depth. Not only have they signed a bunch of role players, but they've signed them to a bunch of contracts that are tradable in use. And not only that, but because they're a couple of years off of the big trade that they made with the Thunder to acquire Paul George, they actually have some distant first-round picks that they can add. And so they are, you know, and I keep bringing this up because I think that there is going to be what I suspect will happen this year. There are too many good teams. Too many teams are invested in winning. The lottery is very good, and my suspicion is that some team, one to three teams, are going to get into January and realize it ain't happening for us, and we need to retrofit. And I think there's going to be some teams that are sellers at midseason. Mm-hmm. And so what I think is that, you know, there could be a trade or two midseason that could really affect this. So Paul George and Kawhi Leonard both make $43 million. By the way, this is a strange little thing. Paul George makes $72, $76 more than Kawhi does this year. $76.
I think Kawhi would be okay with that.
Let it be known.
Some other players might not. Some other alpha players might not be okay with that.
That's true. I think Kawhi would be okay with that. So they have the following players under contracts between 10 and 16 million. Norman Powell, two-way wing, valued. Marcus Morris, combo forward, didn't have a great year last year, but has value. Luke Kennard, who is a shooter, has value. And we're not talking about guys who are trading for Kevin Durant, but Robert Covington. The instant they signed him to that contract extension last year, I was like, well, that's signed to be traded. The guy gets traded every about 9 months anyway. Reggie Jackson, Nick Batum, Ivica Zubac, and they also signed Terrence Mann. He signed an extension that doesn't go up, but he's on an attractive tradable contract. And then, of course, they have Brandon Boston, who's young, but it was an attractive piece. Yeah. So in addition to them having all of these different guys that they can play on, which is what Ty Lue's job is to figure it out, they could improve throughout the season.
Yeah, and that's the thing that's so smart about them. When they acquired Norm Powell, I remember telling someone in the front office with the Clippers, you guys got Robert Covington? You could trade him, like, right now. You could swap him for something else before the trade deadline.
Yeah, that trade.
He's an asset.
That's a classic example. They were not really going anywhere last year, although they weren't, like, you know, they hadn't given up hope. Mm-hmm. But that trade was a midseason trade. They took on a whole bunch of money with the Blazers. And they did it because they could. Because they had, you know, they don't have to worry about money.
Yeah, they sent out, like, Eric Bledsoe in that trade. Eric Bledsoe and Justice Winslow. The Clippers have been very smart about trying to kind of replenish their assets. They gave up a lot of first-round picks for Paul George, but they now have all these manageable contracts that they can ship out in packages. They have second-round picks, I believe, and they got some distant first-round picks, so if they want to improve, they can. But this roster, like, of 15 deep, I think the Clippers are going to actually need to use that early in the season. Their first 3 months is jam-packed with games. They got 15 back-to-backs. 11 of them come before February 1. So that
I
is
wonder
a lot
how
of
much that is
games.
Because they have disadvantageous. They have, like, they're sort of sitting third at the table at Crypto
and building. Yeah,
because the Kings also, the LA Kings, who actually sort of own the building.
Yeah, own the building. Yeah. So I think what you're going to see is a minutes restriction, probably.
Definitely.
For Kawhi Leonard.
John He'll have Wall. A minutes restriction the rest of his career.
John Wall has played 40 games in 3 seasons.
Right.
He's worked out a
that's
lot.
That's a free roll.
But, you know, these are guys that, you know, you're going to have to manage them. And I think this has become like a broken record for the Clippers, okay? But we talk about this every time come playoff time. Where's their chemistry? Where's their health? And because you have all these guys, Ty Lue's going to – I can hear Ty Lue already saying it already. Well, I didn't have these guys, and I'm mixing and matching, but we got to get our chemistry right come playoff time. The Clippers are probably going to have that same issue, but it's a good issue to have because they have so many guys. We could talk about going into camp. Who's going to be their starting point guard, Reggie Jackson or John Wall? I think it's going to be Reggie Jackson. Keeps them in a good state of mind. You know, he's been a big contributor for them. Bring John Wall off the bench.
I have no idea what John Wall's going to do. I just want to be clear. I just have no idea.
I mean, he looks good on those videos, but everybody looks good on those
John
videos.
Listen, John Wall, he only played 40 games for the Rockets, but he still has juice. There's still gas left in the tank. He's not perennial all-star John Wall.
He'll never be that guy again. Say.
But for a taxpayer mid-level.
Less than that, wasn't it? Or did they give him the
I think it was a taxpayer mid-level. Like, dude, that's a nice addition. He's going to be able to definitely push the pace. You know, he's a great passer. I think he's going to help them. But I agree with you, Ohm. Yes, it is about having the ability to maybe put together some trade package. Yes, certainly it's nice to have that kind of flexibility, those kind of options. It's nice to have the ability to play a lot of different ways, a lot of different styles. They can play, you know, they can play traditional big. They can go – and it's not even small ball. It's, you know,
long ball. Yeah,
6-7 across the board. They can play all these different styles. So, you know, you can go matchup by matchup once you get to the playoffs. But it's also, this depth is going to allow them to kind of
pace themselves throughout the season when you know, right now you know, Kawhi's going to sit out 15 or 20 games. Yeah. Even if he's completely healthy.
Yeah, but Kawhi George should never play a back-to-back again in his career.
There's no point in it.
And he should be on minutes restrictions till the playoffs.
And now when Kawhi's sitting out because it's a back-to-back, there's quality players that are filling those minutes.
You know what I think I can see them looking at come trade deadline is an athletic shot blocker. They don't really have that. Zoo is their one big guy.
Well, that's what they always want. That's what they wanted Ibaka to be.
Right. But they'll need help on the glass, rebounding. They'll need somebody to block shots and kind of intimidate inside. And so, you know, if somebody comes open, come trade down the line, I could see them pouncing on something like that.
Yeah. So they're going to be a team that we're going to be watching very closely. Another team that you spend a lot of time keeping an eye on and we're going to talk about right now is the Denver Nuggets. Nuggets, again, one of the more fascinating teams, like the Clippers, bringing back star players. So Jamal Murray is now – so he had the injury, I believe, in April or
– April.
April of 2020.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so he is, you know, 18 months off the ACL. Mm-hmm. Michael Porter Jr. with the back injury, another back surgery.
Yep.
But he's a year off of it. Mm-hmm. Not quite
last
a year.
October.
Right. Yeah, almost a year.
Last November, I think. Yeah.
He played a little bit last year.
Yeah.
He looked terrible.
Yeah, I think he played until early November.
Jokic looked good in the Eurobasket.
I think Jokic is still going to be a pretty good basketball player. I think Jamal Murray is going to get back, and maybe not early in the season, but I'm confident Jamal Murray will get back to being a legit co-star. Michael Porter Jr., to me, I'm a massive skeptic. You know, you're talking about multiple back surgeries.
I think three.
Yeah, how's he going to be able to move? And then also just like, listen, the back wasn't the only red flag on him. He's not the only reason. That's not the only
reason. I know, but I will say this. Like, the contract is a problem, but at the end of the day, so the Nuggets are going into the tax for the first time in a long time. The contract is a problem, but at the end of the day, they don't need him to be a superstar. They need him to be a supporting star.
Right.
Yeah. This is what I've heard so far. A, and you just saw Nikola Jokic in Europe, right? I hear he is in great shape. He came into camp last year in phenomenal shape. The two-time MVP is said to be in as good a shape as he's been. This is what I've been told. The Nuggets have been sending, you know, my dude Felipe Eichenberger. He is their strength and conditioning guy.
The Nuggets kept going to Serbia.
He's been going out to Serbia. They've been sending waves of guys out there to make sure
the Nuggets made a big trip to Serbia to give him his MVP.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of never good when you don't get to
receive they're racking up the mileage.
Then they went back over en masse.
Yeah,
to give him the contract extension.
Yeah, and they're still they're still going out there.
Is there a nonstop from Denver to Belgrade?
I'm hearing the MVP is in terrific shape and ready to go. Jamal Murray, I hear, is good to go. He will probably be he and MPJ will probably be on a minutes restriction when the season starts, but they are ready to go for camp. Michael Porter Jr., I think, was out here in Los Angeles working out with guys from her, like Jason Tatum, some other guys, and kind of holding his own, which I think is good for his mental game to know that, you know, he can be back and he can still hold his own. I think it's a matter of time before Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. just don't think about their injuries and just play. And I think that's going to be important. But we're talking about, like, I was crunching Jokic's numbers the other night, and Jokic, you know, had a historic season. Mm-hmm. But now he's going to get Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. back.
Right.
3-and-D guy in KCP. Athletic guy in Bruce Brown. Okay. Yeah. Bones Highland now.
Bruce Brown, an underrated signing.
I love KCP because they needed some guys who were –
Versatile defenders.
Yeah, and then KCP spaces it. Yep. You know, Bruce Brown, obviously not as much, although he's
Bruce Brown in a pick and roll with Jokic, that could be nice to watch.
Bruce Brown can do a lot of different things.
Yeah, Bones
Highland. And by the way, you're talking pick and roll with the 7-footer with the ball in his hands.
Yes.
Yeah. They traded Monty Morris to get KCP.
Yeah.
Well, it was a vote of confidence in Bones Highland, who was their first round pick last year.
I think Bones Highland now kind of feels that, like, you know, Will Barton was kind of like this guy that needed to create on offense, and now I think Bones is going to have the ball in the second unit and really kind of create and score. They're going to be nice when Jamal Murray doesn't play. He's probably going to take, you know, maybe some back-to-backs off.
Yeah.
Bones Highland's going to come in and be thought of. And look, they got like an Ish Smith to kind of be that backup point guard on nights when Bones has to start, things like that. So I think this is a I think this is a team that's going to win 50 games or more easily.
Oh, I agree.
Okay? I shockingly looked the last three seasons. The Nuggets did not win 50 games. Yeah. And, yes, they did have a lot of injuries. But you can make the argument that even though Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. are coming back and are going to score a little bit more, I think Jokic's numbers could actually get better. Like, there's only been, I think, three guys that have won three MVPs in a row. Yeah. It's like Larry Bird, Wilt Chamberlain. I'm missing one more person that I'm blanking out on.
Did Kareem win three in a row? I don't know. He won six.
Yeah.
But it's hard. The bar for the third one is very high. Yeah. We've seen it with other players like LeBron.
If he wins 55 games, which would be like a 7-game improvement from last season, and his numbers go up.
I'm just going to tell you right in advance. Even if he has the exact same numbers from last year and the Nuggets win a few more games, it's not going
to. You can't talk about Jokic MVP with the campaign manager against him.
All right.
Like, this is when he'll start cussing. He's going to turn red. Every time you mention Jokic is an MVP, when he gets all upset, I thought I warned you about this before you didn't warn me.
Voted for him for MVP.
See how red he's getting?
I'm in the sun. I voted for him for MVP 2 years ago, and last year I voted for Embiid, and I voted him second. Is that an insult? Why is that a problem?
You're the one with the problem.
It's your problem. You brought it
up. You're the one with the problem, jackass.
Throwback. All right, Owen, we look forward to talking to you throughout the season. Enjoy it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Sorry that there's no Hawaii or San Diego trip for you this year.
Man.
What's
Ballmer?
I get Vegas and Seattle.
Is Ballmer getting stingy? Right. He's not giving you a beach
trip. Oh, I already told Ty Lue when I saw him at Summer League. I said, okay, I get it. This year we're going to Vegas. That's your home. Then we're going to Seattle. That's Ballmer's home. But next year, no. Back to Hawaii. He said, okay, done.
All right. Thanks, Owen.
Thanks.
And now we welcome Andrew Lopez, New Orleans-based NBA reporter. We're just talking, McMahon, you have a dog. McMahon went to Slovenia for 2 weeks, did some great podcasts.
Slovenia and Germany.
And when you came back, you had a dog. That'll teach you about going away for 2 weeks in the offseason.
Well, let's be real honest. I don't have a whole lot of scene control when I'm home either. I mean,
that's true. He is a married man now, Andrew. So the Pelicans had one of the most fascinating regular seasons I can remember.
Yep.
1-13?
1-12 start.
1-12.
3-16.
3-16. And yet there I was, you and I, in the playoffs with standing ovations.
And Jose Alvarado chants.
Jose Alvarado.
Grand Theft Alvarado.
That's
a top five nickname in the league right now.
Yeah. And then whenever he gets a steal, they chant Jose.
Jose, 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 Jose. Yeah.
That was great. What a journey last season was without Zion playing one lick. So Zion signs a big extension this offseason. And apparently is ready to go, right? That's the word?
That is the word. He is ready to go. He has been working out on his own ever since he has been officially cleared.
You didn't see McMahon's
I heard McMahon's.
The folks on YouTube
I heard the nostrils.
Is Zion and his stepfather/advisor aware, like the Pelicans have a whole staff of people who are experts in their field? And might be able to like assist him in things like off-season workouts.
They do, and okay. He has at least taken steps. He is now working with Jasper Bibbs, his strength and conditioning coach. He has a chef. He has taken steps now to improve his body, so we don't have a situation where he is only playing 85 games in a 3-year stretch or missing an entire season. So hopefully those steps are.
Hopefully he's not shooting any more commercials with the chips and the Mountain Dew. That's no
that had to be like weeks post surgery, and which is why he is like you can't even see a leg that is probably has a boot on it.
It wasn't a great look.
No,
not fantastic.
I know he's selling Mountain Dew, but and I know that you know he probably couldn't run around and dunk, but you know. So the Pelicans are a team that. Got into the playoffs through the play-in.
Mm-hmm.
there's huge excitement around them. They had a great rookie class last year, specifically with Jose Alvarado and Herb Jones.
Trey Murphy
is an upwardly mobile perimeter shooter who played more and more. So they've got good young players. They've got good veteran players. The midseason trade for CJ McCollum worked out. Larry Nance. It wouldn't surprise me if Nance and McCollum are both eligible for extensions. It would not surprise me if they had a good chance of getting those done. We'll see. It's not vital.
Yeah, I did not like the CJ McCollum trade at all. And, you know, I said as much when it happened. I was wrong. Yeah. I retract that.
He was not
great.
Is that
something else you say now that you're married?
I've learned
your growth
that for sure.
Is amazing, McMahon. It's been amazing to watch.
So I thought it was a silly win now move for a team that didn't have a chance, and then they got in the playoffs, and now it's like, hey.
He was not great in the playoffs, though, by the way.
Okay, but he was a major part in getting them there, and if he is your number three offensive weapon, which he would be, because Ingram's a stud. And obviously Zion is a
Zion is one of the most athletically freakish.
Yeah.
I mean, people forget because he hasn't played. I'm disappointed how Zion's career has gone, but I was all in on this guy.
No, when he's on the floor, he is an absolute offensive wrecking ball.
And Brandon Ingram is the closest thing I've seen to Kevin Durant in terms of.
We saw that in the playoffs.
Right.
His playoff stretch, those first few games in Phoenix were just incredible what he was doing.
He's unguardable doing at times, man. When he's got it going, he's unguardable.
And I think to your point about the CJ trade, I think not many people thought about was he had been a two his entire NBA career. I mean, he would play the backup one. If Dame was out, he would play the one. He really got a chance to be the guy to start the offense, initiate it. And with Zion not there, it is just, okay, I'm just playing off of Brandon, trying to get things going. He thrived offensively in that point guard role.
And you're obviously much closer to the situation. Watching it from afar, it seemed like that group really benefited from having an adult in the room.
Yes, 100%. And I think Zion has benefited from having an adult in the room. Mm-hmm. When CJ told me, when they came out here on a West Coast trip, there were multiple team dinners that they had. They would sit right next to each other at the team dinners. Zion has mentioned, CJ's kind of put him on game on a lot of different things in terms of taking care of his body, things like that. He has been the adult that this team has needed and searched for since David Griffin got there.
I will say that before the CJ trade, there was all of this distance between the organization and Zion, both perceived and reality, including the fact that he went to Portland the midway through the year, which I don't quite understand it, but okay. And since CJ got there, and I'm not saying it's just because of CJ, but like they've gone back together. And here he is. Like, he agreed to a contract extension that was favorable for the team. Zion is still going to get paid. It's not like he's not protected. But in the event of terrible catastrophe, like he has a bunch more injuries, the Pelicans are protected. He didn't have to sign that.
Correct.
But he was very interested in staying. And there was this real negative feel within the organization last year with Zion out and them off that bad start, and that has completely flipped around. I just don't know, Andrew, how much more wins it's going to lead to.
That's the key. So this is a team, like we talked about before, started 3-16. So that's to get back into the play-in race. They were 36-33 after that start. They were an above 500 team with CJ. I think regular season wise, they maybe only had 15 games. I think with CJ and Brandon,
He got hurt too.
Brandon had dealt with the hamstring; he was out for a good stretch there late. Yeah. But okay, if you take what they were, just with CJ and Brandon, that should be a 44-45 win team. If you go up, now you add a guy who averaged 27-7 on 61% shooting, that group,
and you've got guys who should. You know, there should be improvement. You know, guys who contributed as rookies,
Herb Jones,
they get better.
Trey Murphy.
Yeah, those guys get better as
that. Also, what I've been talking about for all these pods, they have the ability to make a deal.
Yes. Yeah.
They have extra picks. They have young players that are attractive. And the guy that I think would likely potentially be traded in a deal would be Devontae Graham, the guy that they signed. He's because of Alvarado's emergence. He might be a guy that might be available.
Well, I barely played in the playoffs because he
Well, it's just hard not to play Alvarado. Alvarado.
Yeah, Jose gives you so much more on defense. Right. And the thing about here's the thing about Devontae for them. Yeah, they gave up a first round pick to do that sign and trade. It was a big deal, especially after not getting a first round pick back for Lonzo Ball from the Bulls. But you signed Devontae Graham to essentially be your two in an offense led by Zion.
Yeah.
That has never happened.
Right.
You never got to see the version of Devontae that you wanted. Right. And then Jose Alvarado emerges. And then you trade for CJ McCollum to be your one.
That's just not a spot for
you him. Just haven't seen the guy who you tried to sign in the way you wanted to see him.
Well, listen, we're going to see. I think Zion is going to be a little more out there. You know, he went like a year between speaking to the media. I think we're going to see and hear from him a little bit more, and I just want to see him play. We're going to go through some more teams here that you're familiar with, Andrew. First off, McMahon's hometown team, the Dallas Mavericks. We've talked a ton about them over the summer. They had a organizationally not a great summer. They were in the Western Conference Finals last year. Let's not forget that. And they have likely leading candidate for MVP who has played this summer and in theory hopefully is staying in shape in these days right here.
Well, he played Eurobasket, you know, right up until last week.
Yeah.
And he had about 7 weeks off between the Olympics and training camp last year, and it was appeared to be seven pretty damn fun weeks.
Yeah.
I don't think he can do as much damage in 2 weeks.
All right. So
I'd hope not.
That team, Jason Kidd looked good in his second stint as coach. He did some things, especially from third stint. I blocked out the
Brooklyn. You forgot about
Brooklyn. I blocked out Brooklyn.
I was going to say, which one did you block out?
Year.
He's tried, I'm sure.
yes. They got better from start to finish that season. Spencer Dinwiddie could have a huge year this year. They are not of the teams. I keep talking about these teams that have stuff to trade. They're not really in that.
No, and they still owe a pick on Porzingis.
To New York.
And, you know, and the thing about the Mavericks, I always say this, they can't use picks to make trades that make them a little bit better. Yeah. They've got to keep those things bundled up, and, you know, they've got a couple of years now before the heat could get turned up. They've got to find their version of the Jrue Holiday deal.
When you say the heat's turned up, what do you mean there?
I mean, listen, everybody understands NBA math, right? So I'll just put the numbers out there.
Luka has 4 years on his contract starting now.
4 years plus the player option. We understand that player option doesn't matter. So when there's 2 years left on a deal, like, you know the NBA math.
When,
and again,
that's when he's extend. It's when he would extend.
Basically. Well, it's also when he would have leverage if he decides, hey, I maybe need to find greener pastures. Now, I think that the Mavericks are smart to be patient and try to, you know, make the right trade that is a massive addition instead of, you know, desperate kind of, hey, a few more wins here, a few more wins there. And I know Luka wants to win in Dallas, and you know, that's his goal. I don't think he's itching to leave now, but if the peak of his first, first 6 years, if the peak is a run to the West Finals and they lose the second-best player right afterwards, that would be problematic. Now, hey, Luka's good enough to where if they have good health around them, they do have some really nice role players, your Dorian Finney-Smith, your Reggie Bullocks.
They've extended guys, too. They extended Dorian Finney-Smith.
The Finney-Smith deal might be one of my favorite deals.
Yeah, Finney-Smith
is in the league.
Finney-Smith is – he's just a phenomenal, you know, kind of prototypical glue guy. Great guy in the locker room. Shoots the three at a really good rate. Moves the ball. Never complains about touches. And guards the other – either the first or second best player. Reggie Bullock's the same type of guy. Yeah. They've got two of those guys. They need maybe the biggest wild card in the Western Conference to pay off, and I'm talking about Christian Wood. And there's talent. You know, I see the look, and I've seen that look from scouts. There's talent there. How he accepts what appears to be a six-man role is going to be fascinating. He finally has a chance to prove that he can be a major part of a winning team.
I mean, Luka should get him looks.
He's like, you like wide open threes and lobs, you're going to get plenty of them. And he's excited about that. I just think he'd be more excited if he's a 36-minute starter than a 28-minute six man. But they promised JaVale McGee the starting job.
For Christian Wood, I mean, at some point you ask yourself, why has he been on so many teams as talented mm-hmm. as he is?
Even when he started getting good, teams were like, well, Detroit's like, okay, we'll
send I watched it firsthand in New Orleans. He had those 10 games. Where I think he was a 20-10 guy for the end of the season. That was the end of the Anthony Davis. Oh, I only have to play 20 minutes. I only have to play 20 minutes a game. I'm not going to finish fourth quarters.
That's all, folks.
That was, yeah.
Portion of his career.
The That's All Folks night was a fun night. trying to make it to the arena as soon as he walks in like that. That was, yeah, quite crazy. But for Christian Wood, I do like I kind of like the idea of him coming off and being that sixth man and playing those 28
you
minutes.
You do.
I do, but I am not Christian Wood. I can yes. I am
Does
a lot
like it?
A lot shorter than Christian Wood. But to your point, he is going to get those looks with Luka, and I think maybe if it's not those 8 minutes a game may not matter to him, but if I'm still going to touch 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 points a game because I'm going to get these open looks, I think that may kind of supersede that.
I'm confident in saying that Christian Wood believes he's the second best player on the Dallas Mavericks, and that he is in a contract year. Again, that's just it's a potentially sensitive situation. Yeah. It's also a talent that maybe it does pay off.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about a team that made a major splash this offseason, and the Minnesota Timberwolves, mm-hmm. one of the most remarkable trades in NBA history, trading for Rudy Gobert. That trade for Gobert helped Towns, because Karl Towns will now be able to play power forward more. Mm-hmm. He will be able to stretch the floor a little bit more. He's coming off an All-NBA season. He signed a Supermax extension. But the reason they made the trade was because of Anthony Edwards, because they believe that Anthony Edwards is their superstar. It was a vote in confidence in him that he is their one. Towns is their two, in my view. I don't know if they would go on the record and say that.
Right.
And they see Gobert as their three. And Gobert in a third position as opposed to a second position potentially could be very different. I'm not 100% sure that arrangement, that they are going to be able to deploy their best team in a playoff setting. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little bit worried about how Karl Towns played under pressure at times last season. But I certainly am a big believer in Anthony Edwards' talent. When you talk to people in Minnesota, they're a little bit worried about, you know, part of the thing that makes him a great player is he has so much incredible confidence, and he's kind of unconscious in that he doesn't worry what he can't do. He just does it. But some of his decision-making on the court and off the court, which we just saw, where he was just fined $40,000 for unfortunate comments, that is a little bit worrisome, but there's way more upside there than
that. Ant-Man will never be accused of overthinking a situation.
I really like Anthony Edwards, and I like how they have now positioned themselves as this. Look, you are our guy. You can take us where we want to go, and we're going to give you all the help that you need. Mm-hmm. And you now add the NBA's best defender behind him, best post defender behind him, and Rudy Gobert, multiple-time Defensive Player of the Year awards.
A defensive system unto himself.
I mean, he alone got the Utah Jazz multiple top 10 finishes. You could just you take him away and it was a different offense. I mean, different defense. But if Ant makes that jump, this is another team who makes a jump into the fight for home court.
The development of Jaden McDaniels is also going to be critical.
Who they were able to hold. They were very excited they were able to hold on to in that trade.
Right, at the expense of probably an extra pick.
Yeah.
Probably
but,
so.
Hey, he is an athletic 6'10" guy. If he can
– defense.
Yeah, he's a you know, really good defensive player, maybe the best defender that Gobert's ever been teammates with. If he can become – if he develops as a three-point shooter, I think that's going to make a massive difference for the Timberwolves, because there are spacing concerns here. And, you know, Gobert is an elite screener, role man, finisher, offensive rebounder. But, listen, if he's out there with Cat, like – Cat's not just going to be spotting up on the weak side. Like, Cat has to be involved in a lot of the primary action. Chris Finch is a very creative coach. I'm curious to see what he comes up with as far as utilizing Gobert. But still, you got to make sure Cat's touching the ball. Obviously, Edwards needs the ball.
So the NBA rank that just came out this week, Gobert, Ant, and Cat, all three in the top 25. They're the only team in the league to have three guys in the top 25. Mm-hmm. And D'Angelo Russell, who is a bit of a maddening player, but is in the last year of his contract. He's extension eligible. I don't foresee an extension coming there, but he is highly motivated. So another team we're going to talk about here, the last team we're going to talk about on this pod, Memphis Grizzlies, number two seed last year. Easy to overlook them because they go about their business and handle their business, although they run their mouths.
I was going to say, they handle their business and they holler about
it. Right, but they don't. They didn't make any major splashes this offseason because they're not a team that signs free agents.
Well, and they lost. They lost some key pieces.
They lost Kyle Anderson to Minnesota.
I was going to say.
They traded DeAnthony Melton.
Yeah.
To get an extra first-round pick.
Right.
Those are two guys who were significant contributors last year. Jaren Jackson Jr., it's not clear when he will be able to play.
That was a disappointing situation.
A guy who's had a lot of injury issues in his career. One, it's not clear when he's going to be able to play, and then, when's he going to be able to get back in rhythm? And he was a legit defense player of the year candidate last year. He didn't have a very good offensive year. The picture of Jaren Jackson Jr., the potential of Jaren Jackson Jr. is he's unicornish offensively. He's a guy who he can shoot the three, which he did well early in his career, really didn't the last, last year, barely played the year before. He can create a little bit with the ball in his hands. He can, he can roll, he can pop, he can run the floor. They need him to have a bounce back year offensively. But man, I mean, Ja Morant, maybe the most fun player in the league.
So they did keep Tyus Jones. Tyus Jones was a guy that a lot of teams love to have as their backup point guard. He was willing to stay to be the backup, and they extended Ja, which was a no-brainer, but was good to have done. Mm-hmm. And no opt-out, full five-year
extension. And I mean, what a core going forward when you talk about Ja. Desmond Bain, who made a massive – he went from being a, wow, that's a really nice 3-and-D guy he got in the last pick of the first round to, holy crap, this is a legit, potential number two guy on a contender. I would say he's their second-best player and Jackson number three, but that's a heck of a, young core. I don't know if there's a better 23, 24 and under core in the league.
You mentioned the Melton trade where they picked up the extra first-round pick. I think that just kind of – speaks to how much they trust their draft process. They have nailed these picks.
I do think they like Zaire Williams, who was their first round pick last year,
and played for him. Yeah. Played for a 56 win team.
Yeah. So you know what I'm gonna talk about. I'm gonna talk about what they can do. They have plus picks. They have extra picks, and they have some guys on last year their contract who are tradable. Danny Green was in that Melton trade. He's come back from the ACL, but he's basically a contract at this point. Mm-hmm. Dylan Brooks, who has played a key role for them, but is in the final year of his contract. He is extension eligible too, but potentially available in trade with a pick. And then, you're talking about it. You can really cook with gas there if you want to do something down the line. Now, of course, they would say, no, we want Dylan Brooks. We're going to keep Dylan Brooks, but okay. And Steven Adams, also in the last year of his contract. Mm-hmm. Now, you'd need another center, and he does play a role for them, but Steven Adams. So they have... They're holding an interesting hand. They have all those last year guys. They have picks. They own all their picks. They have extra picks. So
And they're a team that had the second best record in the Western Conference last year, and certainly has the potential for a long window.
Which is what they're looking for. There were some people that whispered about them for Durant because they have the type of assets.
Yeah.
They built this team through the draft. They draft really well. They don't use free agency. They use the draft and trade, specifically the draft. It's hard for me to think.
They use free agency. Remember Chandler Parsons?
That's why they don't use free agency. they're not a destination anyway, but
overrated barbecue.
I'm not sure they're going to be willing to give the overrated
barbecue.
Whoa.
The barbecue is overrated there.
It's a Texan saying that.
That is a Texan saying.
Actually, delete that. I got to go there the first week of October.
Actually, don't delete that. All right. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, McMahon. Thank you to all the folks we had on this podcast. Thank you to our producers here in LA. We will talk to you very soon.
Adios, amigos.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.